Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode 279. Today I have with me Kendall, still on our first day of build.
I've stuck around.
And then our special guest, Matthew Henderson. And Matthew, do you mind giving us an introduction, what you do on Azure Functions?
Sure. Oh, are we talking about Azure Functions? Is that what we're doing?
It's my favorite topic.
I should have said today we are going to be talking about Azure Functions.
I actually like the way you unveiled it because it made it seem like it was a little bit more mysterious, right?
Lots of mysteries in the cloud.
Yeah, so many.
But so I'm a program manager on Azure Functions. I focus on security, extensibility, a few developer experiences, things like that. Build's been pretty exciting so far. Lots of people, lots of questions. It's exciting.
Yeah. So Matthew told us that he had been working the booth all day, which pretty much means essentially everyone at Build is walking around asking him a million questions about Azure Functions.
What questions do you get the most today?
That's actually
like what do people want to know more about, or what are areas that they're unclear?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of folks are still kind of they're still wrapping their head around serverless in general. There's a lot of folks who just want to know what it can be used for, kinds of best practices, scenarios, and things like that. We've been getting lots of good attention. There are a couple of call-outs from earlier sessions and things like that. So folks are getting introduced to it, and they want to understand what the benefits are, things like that. So certainly a lot of that. But then we get all the way to people who seem like it's the first thing on their list this morning is I'm going to go find the product team. And I'm going to ask my very specific question, and we're going to get right into the technical details. And there's been a lot of wonderful collaborative troubleshooting and things like that. So these kinds of things are always a lot of fun.
I love getting a bunch of developers together. It's always a good idea.
I know. And then also people that are learning different things at the same time. So just for the benefit for myself and some of our listeners, what is the benefit of serverless and when should we consider serverless?
Right. So serverless is a weird term that nobody in the serverless field likes. We all kind of agree that it's a misleading thing. There are, in fact, still servers.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Servers are sitting back underneath there?
Somewhere? Yeah.
they don't run just in the cloud, like in thin air?
I went to an empty warehouse and they told me it wasn't actually our data center. It's an unfortunate misnomer. The point is you don't have to care about the servers. You're not provisioning and managing and patching and scaling and doing capacity planning, all these things that kind of get in the way of you actually building your app. And so that's kind of the promise of serverless. It's about owning less so that you can refocus on the things that matter, like your business logic. That's a very philosophical approach in practice too. The model is with Azure Functions, you're going to give us a piece of code. You're going to tell us when you want it to run, what events cause it to execute. That could be like a queue message, HTTP request, image getting uploaded to a blob. And then we'll go ahead and look at the event stream and scale your functions out based on the type of load we're seeing. And when you're not getting any events, we scale you down to zero. And here's the beautiful part. You're only paying for the amount of time your code spins running. So if you're not getting events, you're not paying. And so a lot of folks see reductions from using the functions. I've had one customer boast, 100-fold cost reduction, which is wild.
Wow.
But on the same vein, because I'm focusing on business logic that actually matters and I'm not dealing with all these other, taxes of building my app, I'm also getting to market faster. Mm-hmm. We see things like 75% cost reduction in terms of just time to market. That's pretty valuable too.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, most people care about money, right?
I don't know. Yeah. But
I think it's important.
Yeah. So is it possible to build an entire application on Azure Functions?
Sure. Yeah, we see it. We see the whole spectrum, right? We see the customer that uses the single function to do one bridging task between two different solutions. And then we see folks who go, all in, I'm doing my entire web backend on serverless and things like that. So it runs the full spectrum. I mean, it's a building block.
So I have one question, and this is, we're going to dive into updates. I know everyone listening to this is like, get to the updates. But one thing that I want to touch on a little bit is we have our Azure integration services that includes like Logic App. Can you talk a little bit about the differentiating factor between, you know, using something like a Logic App to trigger some type of action versus using a function? And then maybe a little bit about durable functions, just so that everyone's kind of level set for when we get into the updates as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. We started with serverless and some of the promises there. Azure Functions is not the only serverless service. We have plenty of them at Microsoft. So Logic Apps is kind of the other classic example. Sort of a visual declaration of an orchestration or workflow. And the cool thing is they have all these different connectors. It's like well over 250 at this point. Like if you want to talk to some service, there's a connector for it in Logic Apps.
Yeah.
That's a very powerful integration technology in a lot of ways. We often see functions and Logic Apps paired together. Mm. So that's a very common pattern. We also have Azure Event Grid, which is basically if there's something happening in Azure, Azure Event Grid will know about it, and you can use that to trigger your functions or Logic Apps. Azure API Management also has an event-driven consumption model as well. And then there's plenty of other things that don't fall into the event-driven model, but still might be in the serverless vein. So, I mean, virtual kubelet, a bunch of other cool technologies around the Azure stack. So you mentioned durable functions, which is often kind of contrasted with Logic Apps.
Okay.
Because they both do workflows and orchestrations. But with durable functions, you're expressing it in code rather than in the visual workflow.
Okay.
You also don't get all those connectors. A lot of it comes down to preference, honestly. In my experience, it's just, does your team prefer working in more of this code-based approach, or do you want to do sort of this more
GUI visual approach?
Yeah, and especially for certain integration solutions, you might be dealing with a different persona set, right? It might not be necessarily developers or things like that. That's one thing we're kind of grasping in functions is we realized that we originally thought of ourselves as a developer product, but all of a sudden we have a bunch of data scientists, IT pros, and SREs using us, and that's kind of an interesting pivot in a way. So
you're gonna have to kind of reimagine how this product can lend itself to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually really exciting. So automation is picking up. A lot of data scientists are using this for like cleaning up data before training or even applying a trained model after the fact if you want to do it in an event-based way. All of these are really fantastic uses. We got a little bit of a field. We do actually see durable functions and Logic Apps together.
Okay.
So these things, you know, it's really a matter of what's the right tool for the job. I do think the big distinction there is like for me, Logic Apps gives me all of these nice integrations, whereas Durable Functions lets me say, I'm just dealing with code and APIs and stuff that I'm writing. And so I just want to orchestrate those in a very, you know, clean, close to home way.
So Azure Functions versus Durable Functions, is Durable Function just mean longer running process or?
It's an extension Durable Functions is an extension of Azure Functions.
Okay.
And the idea there is that we have a trigger type. That's an orchestration trigger. And orchestration triggers have special properties and how they interact with activity functions. Any given function execution is bounded to a 10-minute execution window. But the orchestration can be as long as you want.
Mm.
And it can do things like go to sleep until it gets an external event or all sorts of other things. But it does let me have these activities that, you know, I can chain together a bunch of individual 10-minute executions that create this longer workflow.
So before we switch back over to some of the updates in Azure Functions.
I was going
to
ask something. So
go ahead.
With Logic Apps, you have all these connectors that are built in. Mm-hmm. But if people were to go with Azure Functions, do they have the capability to write their own connectors if they were to communicate across different services?
I mean, you can certainly write that code, but you're having to write that code.
Right.
And
it's painful.
Yeah. I mean, part of the serverless, you know, mindset is use whatever you can off the shelf where possible and only write something you absolutely have to because that's maintenance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's something that you have to keep in good standing and, you know, all that good stuff. So we do see people doing all sorts of great things, integrating with various APIs from functions. Just you might have to write it yourself. And so especially if you're doing sort of an integration solution, I really like Logic Apps for that myself.
Okay. So the essence of function is more more contained in your own application, but then Logic Apps is when you're interacting with other services.
I think that's part of it. I mean, functions, they trigger from external services. They can write data out to external services and things like that. It's code. You can do kind of whatever you want. But it's just a matter of, you know, choosing when you're going to take on writing that code.
Gotcha.
So can you tell us a little bit about some of the updates to durable functions, since we're kind of on that note, and then mm-hmm. we'll switch over to just general updates with functions and you know.
Yeah, sure. So durable functions, we are putting out a sort of an alpha of our 2.0 experience for that. That comes with just, you know, it's a breaking change version. So we're doing a few interface updates and things like that, clean things up. But one of the things I'm really excited about is stateful entities. So it's the idea of being able to have sort of application state captured as part of your overall application model. I keep wanting to call it, it's not an actor framework, but it feels a lot like that.
Which some of our listeners might be familiar with, because that's similar to what Service Fabric provides.
So Service Fabric is an actual, like, full-on actor framework.
Okay.
With stateful entities, we're bringing some of the patterns from that okay. into durable functions.
Interesting.
And so it is very expressive, but I don't want to kind of mislead folks.
Right, right.
Yeah. It's a really nice way of kind of, especially dealing with, like, one of the solutions we see in functions quite a bit is Internet of Things style applications. Like, if you have a lot of devices raising lots of events, serverless is a good way to process them. Actors are a good way of kind of, I should be careful here, you know, kind of the stateful entity approach, that sort of thing is very good for dealing with those events, because you're basically saying, oh, this device is now in this state, and I can, you know, have it forward messages along to, you know, other things that it, you know, it connects to. So, we think that's a really powerful pattern. It's also really interesting for the gaming space, where we do see some serverless uptake as well. But yeah, it's a really neat set of technologies that we put into durable functions. I'm excited to see kind of how people react to that. There's also, just in general, some updates to the storage providers. So durable functions was backed by Azure Storage traditionally, and now we've got a few other options like Redis and so on.
Okay, awesome.
What are actors?
Right. So this is where, like, I definitely know it's not an actor framework. So I don't want to mislead in terms of what actors actually are. But the idea of the pattern is that you're going to have some entity that is going to receive messages that tell it how to mutate its state. And then it can interact with other ones. And so you can get these nice chains of things. But the important properties are that they exist. So I guess it's more akin to virtual actors. And mm-hmm. again, I'm playing fast and loose with the language here. But in a virtual actor, like, if it receives a message and it doesn't exist yet, hey, it exists. And now I can start having things operate on it. It persists across, you know, all of my different executions. It is, you know, is application state. And I can, you know, have it do kind of whatever I want. But I'm not doing a great job explaining this.
No, I think you are. And I think the point is, it's a very complex topic.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like stateful actors and Service Fabric, you know, that's what I associate, because that's where I've heard that before, right? Uh-huh. But I think the point is, luckily for the people who need it and who know what it is, it's available, right?
Right. If you've been looking for bringing some application state into your durable functions experience, this is something worth looking at. And if that sounds like a horrible idea to you, please do not worry about it.
And would part of that, and just to try to get it a little bit more high level, but would part of that be, okay, I've executed this durable function, and the state of something persists beyond just the execution of that one function?
Exactly.
So you can then reuse maybe state from a previous run.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the thing that we have to be careful with, is that we talk about functions, and in general, the best practices for using functions are mm-hmm. functions are stateless.
And that was why I was like, wait, I thought all these serverless, a lot of things serverless.
That's why it's good to ask that
stateless.
Question, because yeah, people will wonder
exactly.
that.
So the function itself might still be stateless, in that it's not actually keeping track of that state or trying to deal with things itself.
Mm-hmm. It's not like shoving it into a variable or something.
Right.
Okay.
And you're not managing that anywhere, but you're basically signaling to this entity, which represents that state, and it takes care of persisting it and all that stuff. And so what's nice about this is that, you know, I'm still able to write pretty clean code. I'm not having to, you know, figure out how to, you know, oh man, I have to go write this into a storage account mm-hmm. or, you know, throw it into Cosmos or something like that, just to keep track of, you know,
what's happening.
Exactly. And so it just, again, we want you to have to write only the code that actually matters to you, rather than the, you know, the heavy lifting, the infrastructure around it. And so this helps avoid what
busy
could
work.
Be pretty complicated. Yeah, busy work.
So when stateful actor, so state and then something acts. Yes, well, got it.
Yes, except these aren't stateful actors because
they're not stateful actors, yes. Right?
Okay. I get confused about it too, but I definitely know that we don't have like all the properties you'd expect,
right.
And so there should be some level setting. This is a new thing. It's called stateful entities.
Stateful entities. Okay,
they're not actors.
No, but that's good because that's. I feel like some of the complexity will be flushed out for our listeners because they won't have to struggle the way.
And they would only need to know the things like they care about.
Yeah, right.
I think that's like the main.
These are all optional too,
yeah.
right? Like, so, I mean, you know, most folks, durable functions is a wonderful solution and the folks who use it love it. And a lot of folks are using it, but there's also a lot of folks who don't. Like it's not required by any means, to use functions. It's just for certain types of application patterns, it is a lifesaver, but only if you need those.
Right.
Okay.
So what are some of the other just cool Azure Functions updates for our listeners? I know that so many of our customers are getting into the serverless space, so I'm sure they'll be excited to hear some of them.
Yeah. So in addition to the durable functions updates we just talked about, we're introducing dependency injection for .NET. That is something that the community has been asking for a while. And we've had a couple of like iterations. I know there's some folks who have been like pulling apart our pull requests and things like that to try and get something like they're very excited about it. So we're excited to get it in folks' hands. So that is a big update. We also announced Project Kata, which is a collaboration with Microsoft.
This is
Red Hat.
Really cool.
Yeah. We're pretty excited about it. So the idea is that, we're bringing event driven scaling to Kubernetes, and let's take it out of the functions context for a minute. You know, traditionally, you know, Kubernetes, a lot of the scaling stuff is all built around HTTP. And so what we're doing is we're bringing this model for bringing custom scalers. So we can look at something like Kafka or an Azure storage queue. And that same kind of logic that we actually use to power the function service, right? We look at the number of events coming in and decide to scale you based on that. That can now be put in your Kubernetes cluster.
Wait, that's so cool. So wait, sorry. I mean, I heard about it and I kind of got it, but now that I'm realizing, you know, pretty much the whole way that we're able to do this serverless model where we scale to what you need, we're bringing that to Kubernetes.
Yes.
Like, let's say that again. We're bringing that to Kubernetes. So cool.
Yes. And of course, we love the idea that we can compose this with functions, right? Because, you know, functions we distribute in containers as well. And so if you want to throw your functions on Kubernetes, you can have a great scaling experience there now. But you can apply it to any other containers that you're running as well, which is really fun. And so we think this is going to be a lot of, we're excited by the initial reaction that we've seen. I'll keep an eye on it as it goes. But, you know, I think this combined with stuff like the virtual kubelet, it's like you can kind of get like your like serverless functions experience on a cluster that you have a lot more control over. Like there's a lot of cool things here.
Yeah. And I think we've covered this on a previous show, but just to give, you know, for anyone that doesn't know what the virtual kubelet is, it's basically the ability to burst container your container workload into a serverless type of like ACI. So Azure Container Instances, you can like burst traffic. So you start saying, okay, I've run out of underlying space on my virtual machines to run additional containers. So instead of spinning up a new virtual machine, I'm going to use Azure Container Instances and start spinning up as many containers as I need on this like virtual node. Is that fair?
So like there's a lot of fun stuff here that like each individually is really valuable, but I feel like I'm seeing them all come together.
Yes, the amalgamation of the greatness.
Yes, it's a lot of fun. So I'm really excited to see how Kata evolves as well, just because we've tried to set it up so that we can have community contribution around scalers, right? So a scaler is just written in Go. It helps define like, hey, I'm going to monitor this event source, and when I see these kind of criteria, that's when I need to make a scale out decision. And then that gets passed on to the horizontal pod autoscaler and all that good stuff. So it's pretty straightforward, we hope, to get additional scalers in there. So we'd love to see the community kind of bring their favorite event sources to bear in Kubernetes.
So is it preview? Is it experimental?
Well, it's definitely alpha.
Like, it's alpha. Okay. I just want to make sure everyone knows on the podcast. Like, no, probably most people aren't doing this in production yet.
Yes. Please no production. but we do want folks to try it out. And, I think it's actually pretty easy to get started just putting it on Kubernetes service. So use AKS to just kind of create a new cluster and install Kata, deploy some apps, and see how it goes. I think it'll work really nicely.
Okay, so I don't know enough about Kubernetes to get excited about that, but I do know
excited,
that there's
Cynthia.
Also
it's worth being excited about. Just the same way that stateful entities somewhere is like someone's like clapping through our confusion,
What actors? No entities. But I do know that there's a new update about PowerShell as well. That yes. I understand, and I feel more of the excitement.
Yes. Yeah, so we now have PowerShell Core support. So it's PowerShell Core 6. It's something that we had this experimental support for PowerShell in our V1, and we saw a lot of folks using it. And that was not great for us because we knew that there were a lot of problems with it. So we took the opportunity in Functions 2.0 to do a ground-up rewrite of our PowerShell support. And it works a lot better now. But we still saw folks using that old version because there was a real community around serverless automation and sort of bringing some of the strengths of Azure Functions to those kind of tasks. And so that's kind of where, Functions was envisioned originally kind of as a developer-facing product, but we're seeing all these IT pros and SREs really embrace PowerShell and start doing work here, and now we have a much better supported way of doing it. So we're very excited to see how that evolves. One of the cool things about it is we actually have managed dependencies. And so what that means is, and this applies to the Azure CLI and Azure PowerShell, we keep those up to date for you on the box.
Awesome.
So you don't have to, you don't have to go update your commandlets or anything like that. You'll always have the latest version of the PowerShell and Azure CLI bits. So,
are you talking about the Cloud Shell on the portal, or are you also talking about like the Azure RM modules that you get?
The Azure RM modules all that stuff. Those are just available to your functions, kept up to date.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that is great.
So we're really excited to see how that evolves, especially because there's a lot of really cool event-driven automation tasks now. Automation is a little bit more than just provisioning your infrastructure.
Right.
And it's about lifecycle governance and all those things. And so there's a lot of really cool stuff that we're going to start seeing, I think, from that community. So I'm super excited. I also really need to learn PowerShell myself.
That's how I feel. I mean, I'm like, I know people who automate their whole lives away with PowerShell.
PowerShell is really cool. Like,
it can do so much. It untaps the power of your machine.
All the libraries or all the commandlets that are available for you, and documentation is pretty good on docs at Microsoft.com on all the things you need to find.
Yeah, I use it for a couple of automation tasks, like for stuff I do for like all my demos and stuff like that. But I feel like I'm just like scratching
the surface.
Yeah,
how can we learn all of this stuff? There's so much to learn.
Yeah,
and it's so
and
exciting.
It's so exactly, and they keep coming out, and they're all like now integrated in some sense or the other right now.
Did you know that Azure Durable Functions now has stateful entities? Yeah.
Oh my God.
I learned that earlier, but see, now I can go tell other people that and know what I'm talking about. It's amazing.
And they're going to be like, what?
They're going to be like, what? And I'm going to be like, it's not stateful actors.
Just
know.
Actors and entities are not the same.
Exactly.
But what do a lot of people use PowerShell for on Azure Functions? I'm curious.
I definitely think we're seeing that initial, like, okay, now I have a way of dealing with like all sorts of just provisioning other infrastructure. There's kind of an irony I realized about automation is it's really weird to have to provision infrastructure in order to then go provision more infrastructure.
Yeah.
So serverless feels like a natural fit for that reason to me.
So instead of having to provision the infrastructure to provision your infrastructure, you can now use a serverless function to provision.
You take out one provisioning. Yeah. Yes. Take out one provisioning process.
Exactly. We also, I think, are seeing a lot of folks really latch onto it for some of their security operations too. So just things like managing like Azure Active Directory and a bunch of other stuff like that.
How do they trigger the functions?
Either just like a manually, like with an HTTP or timer, or
it's integrated with a Logic app.
A lot of them.
It could be.
So I think that one's something that can also evolve quite a bit. There's like preview Microsoft Graph triggers in functions. Those aren't in the best state right now, but I like the idea of like a user gets added to the organization and then all this automation starts up.
Like add them into this OU, like make sure they have access, like
right?
all
like
these things.
Yeah. That sounds really promising to me. But
and like that is where IT spends a lot of time doing work that they don't enjoy doing. And with this, like they can now do something that's actually more fun, like
like getting into, oh yeah, this get working with durable functions and stateful entities.
I'm sorry.
She put me on the spot and I remembered, and see, it's more than just muscle memory at this point. I know this stuff.
See, we went into this and I thought like the top thing you were excited about was going to be Kata, right?
I'm extremely excited about Kata, and honestly, I was extremely excited about it and didn't really even understand it all the way. So now I'm really excited about it because I actually understand it all the way. I think the cool part, just being able to use it for your just container workloads as well, not just running Azure Functions in containers, but also just any other, you know, Docker containers you may be running, is pretty awesome. But
what else did you want to tell our listeners? We're just like not very good at
the girls' room. I don't know if anyone's ever seen that show, but I feel like
we're having a little too much fun here.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, you know, it's serverless, right?
Exactly.
I mean, we're putting the fun in functions.
Yeah.
Went there.
So we're doing like F of fun.
Yes, we are. Yes, wait.
Like a function, F of X, we're doing X is fun.
See, that was okay. Yeah, went over my head, but I appreciate the nerd out right there. So we talked about Kata, we talked about durable functions, we've covered some basics. We talked about PowerShell language support, premium functions.
What are premium functions?
Oh yeah, so we have yet another hosting model. So we talk about like functions running in Kubernetes, functions running in the consumption plan. You've always been able to run functions on an app service plan if you're using app service. We now have a new kind of hybrid hosting model that's a little like an app service plan, a little bit like a consumption plan. The idea here is just that you're going to have a reserved kind of instance. It's not like reserved instances in VM, but like you're going to have one standing instance of Azure Functions that is just kind of idle there. And then when we scale you out, we actually start by giving you that one. And so what that means is that you're mitigating cold start. So that first time that you scale out an instance, you have to get everything loaded. We have to give you the VM. We have to load your app. Your app has to load all of its dependencies and all that stuff. And that can slow you down. This helps mitigate that. It also is just, frankly, better hardware, which is really nice. It has a lot of networking options, too. So if folks have been looking at, you know, functions and have been dismayed by their, you know, the lack of VNet support and things like that, premium functions has a lot of options that kind of make that experience a lot better. And of course, the cold start mitigation is very nice for certain workloads as well.
Awesome. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Logic Apps is now doing some type of VNet integration as well.
Yeah, the integration service environment, ICE. Okay. ISE.
ISE.
We basically call it ICE because the app service environment keeps getting called ACE. So it's
okay. Okay. So.
The SEs.
Yeah. So that might. I know that's not necessarily totally related, but maybe something worth looking into for our listeners is the ICE. Definitely. Integrated service environment.
Something like that.
Something like that. Something like that. We'll put a link to the show notes on information on that. But I believe it has some networking capabilities for Logic Apps.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure. Anything else that you'd like to add before?
Oh man.
Before we part ways.
Anything that's upcoming, maybe that's in the pipeline, or things that you're excited about, or other thoughts you'd want to leave our listeners with, other than the fact that you're ready to get out of this room because we're crazy.
No, I'm having a great time.
Okay, good.
But you know, I mean, I'm trying to think if we got through all the things that we announced. There's a lot of stuff happening in functions and serverless in general, in Azure in general, in Microsoft in general. These conferences I think can often be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're making a lot of updates that kind of give a lot of flexibility. In general, our developer experiences around functions, I think, are one of the things that have really taken us a long way. The fact that you're able to run that same functions runtime that runs in all those different hosts we were talking about, you can run it on your local box. It's integrated with VS Code. You can F5 and just be locally working with functions. That's a really powerful statement.
Wow.
I think we're really, there's a lot of things happening around that tooling experience. That's only going to get better. I'm very excited about that. I'm also really excited personally about the idea of, I don't know if y'all saw the VS Code remoting thing.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Remoting into where?
Well, exactly. You can do it into a container, into like another, I can't remember the description, but the Windows subsystem for Linux.
Yeah, that's going to be
really smooth. And so like things like running your Python in like your Windows subsystem for Linux is super slick, and I'm excited to figure out how that all works with functions.
so much to dive into.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's just a lot of things to play with. I maybe spent way more time than I should have getting Swift working in Windows Subsystem for Linux so I could do it in VS Code when I should have been working on my presentation for Build. But, you know.
Kicking out. It happens.
Yeah. Priorities.
And I know this is kind of off topic, but the Windows Subsystem for Linux, they made an announcement that there's like a second version that's basically going to run a Linux. They're going to bring a Linux kernel to Windows.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
Yeah. So maybe I don't want to misspeak, but I'm pretty sure they're like literally bringing the Linux kernel to Windows. I saw that today and I was like, wait.
What does that even mean now?
I haven't read all into it, but like if y'all are excited about
an
cool
OS
things,
on an OS?
I saw it. I know that they said they're bringing the Linux kernel
sounds great.
To Windows.
I saw that they're doing like a tabbed command shell too. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to have to go do like an entire week of learning after I get done with this conference because, oh man.
Yeah, Windows 10 is getting a Microsoft-built Linux kernel.
Huh. Oh yeah. My goodness.
I can't even unpack that for all of you because what does that even mean? What is the future? What is life? But I think that's just I think in general, functions and all of the other extensibility options that we've integrated into so many of our services are just... It's really cool.
And they keep coming.
Azure's
the whole direction of like we want to embrace and we want everyone to be able to use it regardless of what platform they're on, what OS they're on.
Yep.
It's a really good time to be a developer.
It is. Yeah. It's a great time to be a developer. I like that.
What am I doing here?
Yeah. We'll leave you with this. One really cool thing about getting started with Azure Functions is you don't have to go, the full Functions application. Not everything has to be an Azure Function.
I know,
yeah.
And you can start with a little piece of your application, and then you can test it out, and then you can slowly expand it from there if you want to go full-blown all Azure Functions or if you want a combination of anything.
I love the fact that we see a lot of people just, it's a single function in their entire subscription.
Yeah, and it works!
And it stays that way for a little while, and then you see a second one.
Yeah.
And then it exponentially grows. Well,
yeah, I mean,
or
actually,
linearly
they have a million functions.
Well, it depends on the user, but like even the ones that just get a few and they're valuable to them, like that's awesome.
Yeah.
And then we definitely see the ones that just kind of go exponential, mm-hmm. and it's like everything is serverless now.
Yeah.
And being able to, if you don't want to rewrite your whole application, functions are a really great way to add small pieces of functionality.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we even see rewrites, though.
Yeah.
We were talking beforehand, like I think I've seen a lot of on-prem rewrite directly to serverless because folks just didn't want to go through lift and shift and then transition again.
Yeah, it's like, let's just go all the way. We're going hard and going serverless.
Which, I don't know. That is not something I ever expected.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, I really personally enjoyed this episode. I hope our listeners enjoyed it as much as we did.
And I hope you did too, Matt.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for having me. We didn't do too crazy.
Yeah. Well, Matt, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming.
Enjoy the rest of Build. And do you have a presentation this week?
I do. Yeah. On Wednesday, I'll be going over stateful entities. Hopefully a little
bit
more.
Okay. That's where I'll learn.
Wait, that's so awesome. Okay. And I think most of this.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.